Hello, and welcome to French Tech News with Chris O'Brien and Ethan Pierce, an audio and video podcast and clubhouse series highlighting important stories in English in the world of France's startups, its entrepreneurs, investors, and ecosystem leaders. Our objective is to continue to open this incredible ecosystem up to the Anglophone startup and investment community worldwide. And speaking of the podcast, head on over to Apple or Spotify and search for French Tech News and give that a subscribe. There you will find all of our past discussions and interviews. I would like to welcome our guest today, Jeremy Prince, CEO of Sigfox, as well as my co-host in this French Tech News journey, VentureBeat's Chris O'Brien. Welcome, everyone.
Howdy.
Thank you for having me.
I am looking forward to learning more today about where Sigfox is at as it builds the global network to power the Internet of Things and what's ahead for them over the next few years. I will leave it to Chris to dive in with our first question.
Thanks, Ethan. Appreciate the introduction as usual. Jeremy, it's great to get a chance to chat with you. So thanks for joining us today. Just for some context, so you're in Dallas at the moment, yes? How long have you been in Dallas?
So I've just spent the last 2 years in Dallas as I was running the Sigfox operator in the US that's based out of Dallas. So 2 years. But moving back to Europe in 2 weeks.
Well, we'll look forward to that. French listeners may not know this, but Dallas is a bit of a telecom hub. Is that, or at least it was when I was in the US. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it's very dynamic at the moment, and you're seeing quite a few also tech companies that are considering moving from California to Dallas and Texas. So very dynamic at the moment, and we've got offices in Boston and Dallas. And when I had to pick the place, I think Dallas is dynamic, plus it's central, so it made a lot of sense.
Well, when you get to Toulouse, I can actually plug you into a whole group of ex-Dallas French mafia people who live in the region now. So you were officially appointed CEO in February of Sigfox, but you had some Toulouse roots, as I recall. You grew up here, you attended school here?
Exactly. I was originally British, as you might hear, but grew up in Toulouse. In fact, I think I grew up something like 5 kilometers away from Labège, where Sigfox is headquartered. So wow. Talk about destiny.
So it's a homecoming of sorts. And do you, when you speak French, do you have the Toulouse accent or just have the Parisian accent?
Yes. So I have got a slight Toulouse accent, and I was you were talking about Dallas. So it's funny because when you're in France and you've got a slight Toulouse accent, the day you move to Paris, people think you're slightly dumber than you are because of the Toulouse accent. But when you're in Dallas and you've got a British accent, people think you're smarter than you are. So I suppose it's somewhere in between, but I'm enjoying the Dallas side of it.
So now here is the important question. Is it a chocolatine or is it a pain au chocolat?
It's a chocolatine, of course.
See, now there we go. Good man.
Well, it'll be, I'm sure people will be thrilled to have you back here. I know that'll be a big move. So let's sort of talk a little bit about that transition, though. So as I mentioned, you took over in February for Ludwig Lemon, who was CEO, I believe, officially since the founding of Sigfox, and had been the CEO, its only CEO up until that point. How has that transition gone, especially doing it kind of from a distance?
So, I have been appointed in February, but I am not new to Sigfox because I joined Sigfox almost 3 years ago as Chief Strategy Officer and Executive Committee member. And I was working closely with the two founders, so Ludovic, but also Christophe. Part of my duties, I was overlooking, so you're very familiar with Sigfox. You know that there's Sigfox Corp in France, in Toulouse, that runs and operates the technology, the platform, the clearinghouse, etc. But in the different countries, because as you said, we've got a unique network in 72 countries, you've got independent Sigfox operators. And there were three exceptions to that were Germany, France, and the US, because for time to market reasons, we decided to start there directly before we had to go through, took the time to find the right Sigfox operator. And I was overlooking Germany and the US and moved to the US 2 years ago. So been around the block for quite a while, working closely with Ludovic. And when he was started to think about stepping down, because we were getting to the next phase of the development. I was one of the natural candidates, let's say. So yes, it's a change, but there's also some continuity there. You've also got the Frank Siegel, that's now deputy CEO and used to be COO, that's been there for 4 years also. So continuity is there.
So let me just go backwards for a second to that time in 2018, because I've been, by virtue of being a tech reporter based in Toulouse, I've been following Sigfox, not since the beginning, but they really, I arrived in 2014. They had a really, what was by then French standards, a really big, I think, historic fundraising round in 2015 and 2016. That really made them kind of the poster child of the emerging French tech scene at that moment. You joined a little bit after that in 2018. So what was it about Sigfox at that point that you found interesting and kind of attracted you to that opportunity?
Yeah, it's a very good question because I was working, I was COO of a subsidiary of Technicolor. I was not particularly looking for a job, but I met Ludovic, Christophe, and the rest of the executive committee and had different discussions with them. I would say that there are two fantastic ideas at the root of Sigfox that attracted me very clearly. So number one, on the technical side, you know, we're in a phase where it's all about more bandwidth, more data, 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G. And in fact, the basic idea behind the Sigfox technology is you don't need to build a motorway to ride a bicycle. And with little amounts of data and even a little latency, you can still do a lot in the IoT space. Report temperatures, locations, lots and lots of things. And with those slight limitations from a data point of view, because it's 12 bytes per message and 140 messages per day on our maximum plan, also come huge benefits. Sigfox is a robust and frugal technology, meaning that from a energy consumption point of view, I believe we're the company, the technology that uses the least energy. From a network point of view, I was talking to Christophe, the other founder, and he was explaining to me that one 5G tower uses more energy than the whole French Sigfox network. So from a network point of view, very clearly, but even at device level, and that's also very important. Yeah, so can I, although I'm not technical, but I trust Christophe on that one. But even at the device level, we use less energy than any other technology. Plus, it's a very predictable consumption based on the fact that we're a broadcast technology. So most of the time, the device is asleep. There's no pairing like, you know, with other technologies. And it's just when it's told it's got to send a message, it just broadcasts it and goes back to sleep. So very efficient from an energy consumption point of view, very cost efficient also. And why are those two things very important? Sorry, I'm being a bit long, so don't hesitate to interrupt me. But why are those two things very important? Because I believe they're essential to massive IoT. Cost, why cost? But it's easy. Basically, you can connect anything with IoT if you want, but does it make sense from a return on investment point of view? Well, if I want to connect my pen, no, it's cheaper to buy a pen. So every time you lower the overall cost, and it's not only the Sigfox connectivity cost, it's mainly the cost of the device and the platform, etc. Every time you lower that cost, you open the possibilities. So I'll stick to an example that you're probably aware of if you follow Sigfox. You know that we've got a big contract with DHL in Europe to track trolleys where they put the parcels. And that today makes sense because a trolley must be, I don't know, 200, 300 euros. So the cost of a solution with a device around 20, 30 euros plus connectivity, you have got a return on investment, and because they know where their trolleys are, so they don't need to buy so many, et cetera. So they've got a positive return on investment. within that price point. Bring the cost down. And part of our strategy is to keep investing in R&D so that our ecosystem can bring the costs of devices down. We're clearly targeting RFID price points down the line. And that means that the same customer, DHL, has got the potential to now connect not only hundreds of thousands of trolleys, but can connect basically hundreds of millions of parcels, because suddenly, economically, it makes sense. So cost is very important. Energy is also very important, number one, because it has an impact on the cost of the device because of the battery, et cetera. But number two, because of the hidden costs. I mean, we work with Nichigas in Japan, you've got, I think, 800,000 gas tanks that are monitored using Sigfox. And I think they've just added an extra 150,000. You can't send someone to go and change the battery every 2 weeks or something like that. The hidden costs are very, very, are a very big chunk of the IoT equation. And if you add to that the fact that we're a simple technology, we manage the cloud, there's no pairing, so you just turn the device on and it starts communicating. That means that basically, I like to say it's a bit catchy, sorry about that, but I like to say that we're truly plug and play, just turn it on and deploy and forget. You can leave your device for up to 10 years. And when you're talking massive IoT cost, hidden costs, simplicity, they are all key. And the other thing that's key, just to finish with those keys to the massive IoT, is also the fact that we are in 72 countries and it's one network. I think we're the only player that's achieved that in the IoT space, but even in the telecom space, if you look at the broader picture. What that means is when you're looking massive IoT, you're looking at multinational companies, and they makes their life easier to have one technology, one contract, one price that works across the world. So I don't know how I got to that long description, but I think it's...
No, I, you're on a roll, so I let you go, but that's helpful context. Well, and, you know, again, so you had this promise, you had this kind of zero-G, I think, eventually kind of marketing campaign that you were suggesting that sort of almost... zigging when everyone's zagging in terms of, you know, talking about massive bandwidth and whatnot. And, you know, it's funny, I'm sure you've seen it, but when you go into Christoph's office and he has all that old timey radio gear in there, you really get a sense of like, oh yeah, this is kind of a back to the future, in a sense, technology that's, you know, has that old time basic sensibility to deliver this revolutionary service. So, you know, that obviously attracted people like you. It attracted a whole slew of investors who really got behind it. As we got into 2020, obviously it's an extraordinary year for everybody with the pandemic. At the same time, there was this sort of public sense, and you saw it in the French media, that things weren't quite going as well as Sigfox had hoped in terms of the utilization of the network. There were some talk about strategic changes happening. So, you know, let's talk about 2020 for a second. Again, obviously there's a pandemic, but how did you view what was happening last year? I mean, you know, there were layoffs, I think, later in the summer. Was a criticism fair, or were there things that people were not seeing about in terms of what Sigfox was doing?
No, so I think, so number one, 2020, of course, was a strange year for everybody and had a short-term effect on everyone, with customers delaying some projects, things like that. So, of course, it had an impact, although we still grew. And I think that in the short term, so it had an adverse impact in the short term, for sure. I think in the longer term, and I feel a bit bad saying that, but I think in the longer term, it will have a positive impact on IoT, because people, thanks to the pandemic, thanks to not being able to go to places, thanks to avoiding in person as much as possible, makes it relevant to extract the data in other ways than sending someone in, etc. So we also change the ways you do many things, like even office space, and IoT can help there. And so short term, of course, it had an adverse impact, but longer term, it will have a positive impact, I'm sure. And we're seeing that it's picking up fast now. But to go back, to step back for 1 second, and I'm not shying away from your question about Sigfox. There have been three phases clearly within the Sigfox history. The first phase is what I'd call the build phase, the tech phase. You know, you've got this new technology, and as you said, it's a great technology doing something new with something old. And I love that idea. And so the first few years of Sigfox history was really led by the technology and what can we do with the technology, what can we create, etc. Then we moved for many years to what we call the expansion phase. So as I said, one of the key benefits of Sigfox is this global network. And the second idea, I was saying that there were two ideas that attracted me to Sigfox. One was around the technology. The second was around the business model. Second idea that was great at the time is, how does a small Toulouse-based startup create a worldwide network? And there the business idea was great. It was, well, why don't we rely on local Sigfox operators? They're going to bring the funding to fund the deployment of the network and the go-to-market in the country. But more importantly, they're also going to bring the local knowledge of the industry, of the key players, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that was the second great idea that really attracted me to Sigfox. And when you're talking about fundraising, about size of the company, I think you should also include all those Sigfox operators. And in fact, Sigfox is a lot bigger than we think at the end of the day, because you've got to add, we're a few hundred employees within Sigfox, but if you add all the Sigfox operators, it's thousands. Same thing, everyone raised capital. So it's a big player at the world scale. But to go back to what you were saying and the phases, so tech phase, build phase, then the expansion phase, where we went into all those different countries, 72 countries to date. We should be making some announcements soon that will really materialize the fact that we've got to the end of that phase, where we're not any longer aggressively going after opening new countries, etc. With the exception of China, I think we cover most of the world GDP, and we cover the countries that a company needs, where a multinational company needs. So after that phase, now we have moved to what we call the connectivity phase. So first two phases were setting the scene, let's say, the technology, the network, and now we're going after the IoT, the massive IoT. And it took more time than we expected to drive the massive IoT, but we can see that it's really starting now to pick up. We can see the type of companies we're working with, the size of contracts, etc. And that is, you were talking about the transition, probably one of the reasons also why Ludovic is still a shareholder and stepped down, is he was more of the two first phase man than the third phase, where we're getting to a more industrial phase, where when you want to deal with thousands of indirect customers through RSOs, you're going to deal with millions and millions of connections, hundreds of millions one day, and billions of messages. So everything has got to scale. Everything has got to be industrialized. And Frank and the team have also done a great job to get us there. Part of it went through some reorganization. So there was COVID impact, plus the fact that we need to reorganize things. So there have been some difficult times where we needed to adjust the organization. But I think we're set for the exciting part, the one that was always the aim, the massive IoT.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, I had a chance to listen into some of your annual user conference in November, and I spoke with some folks at Sigfox after that. And, you know, we talked a lot about what you're just describing, but also the notion of the data being collected and how you guys are going to help going forward. I mean, obviously, that's part of the equation, I imagine, throughout this journey that you're describing. But it seems to be a growing focus for what or how you're talking to people or how you're positioning your services. So is that fair description? And what's going on there in terms of how that's evolving?
So just to make sure that I understand the question correctly, what is our position around the data was your question, or?
Yeah, that it wasn't, you know, you talked about the connectivity and the network and the technology, you know, you have the sort of 0G, but then at the same time, you know, again, you're not doing the 5G sort of, you know, massive AI collection of data. But that said, you know, people are getting information, they're having to manage it. I presume it gives them some insight. And so when we're talking to people coming out of that conference, they talked about the things you mentioned, but also that notion of how Sigfox kind of helps with the management of that and what it does for these customers. So
for me, there are three drivers behind IoT adoption. And mainly the first one is the one you're referring to. It's how do you transform your customer's business? How does he change his productivity? How does he get a positive return on investment? And I was talking about DHL. I mean, they had a quick return on investment when they started to track their carts because they didn't need to buy so many and they knew exactly where they were. Michelin, when they track a container, it means that their ETA is improved by one day, and that means millions of dollars. So yes, very clearly there's a strong impact on the economics and the productivity of the companies and the way they work. There's a second driver for me that is more the regulatory driver. So that's when you need to do something like we work with PwC and hotels in the US, where in quite a few US states, hotels over, I can't remember, a couple of hundred rooms, something like that, need to equip their personnel with a fast response button using Sigfox. So there it's a second driver. It's regulatory, and it's same thing when you need to track energy consumption sometimes in Europe because it's compulsory or getting compulsory. So that's second driver. And I'd say that the third driver would probably, and that's the one that we can't really totally foresee today. I like to say that analysts were wrong when they assumed when the IoT was going to pick up. It picked up later than they expected. And I think they're going to be wrong again when you look at the size of the market, because they're looking at the two first drivers. And what they don't take into account is this third driver, it's disruption. It's coming up with new business models. I like to think that when internet was created, no one imagined that in 2021, two of the biggest companies on earth would be Facebook and Google, because no one imagined that you could use the internet in that way. And I think you're going to have similar things in the IoT because, as you said, of all that data flowing. And the fact I like to use the example of there's an insurance company we work with in France, and they've created a solution using a Sigfox tracker that you put in the car and you pay as you go your car insurance. So I'm not saying that's going to be the new Facebook, but I like the new approach, the disruptive approach. And I think that will happen in many cases. So what is Sigfox's role in that? Sigfox's role is to bring that data to those customers in the most efficient and cost-efficient way, in the easiest way. Are we into business intelligence and data crunching today? No. Do we add potentially some value to the data? Yes. Our two sweet spots when you look at the benefits of our technology are really clearly tracking and monitoring. And there, can we add a bit of value there? Yes, we always already do it in the tracking where we add some geolocation services to the data. So, but are we going to go down to the end and create a business intelligence company? No.
I think it's interesting as we look at this idea of when we see this massive IoT scale finally arrive. If we look at the past even just 2 or 3 years, we've seen a dramatic increase in things like the, you know, I look at my window here and I see all kinds of scooters or bikes or things like that that are, you know, different companies that are doing these shared economy tools, that all of those are connected in some way, and are we've got all these different devices that are starting to show up in our life that we, whether people realize it or not, each one of those is showing up on a network somewhere in a way that we are getting more things in our life that are going to be connecting and sharing more data. And I even think about, it's probably been, I guess, maybe even 4 years now that I've had little tiles that I've put in my briefcase or my luggage or things like that. But AirTags come out with Apple and all of a sudden everybody thinks that's the coolest thing ever. And even though it's an evolution of the technology, but it's also, you know, it's interesting to see then how that rapidly increased. Like the amount of people I know now who have AirTags or want to put an AirTag on something, it's dramatically larger than with the tiles. So as those kind of products also people create and potentially larger brands push to market, it seems obvious, yes, that it took a little while for that market to kind of get going, but now we're seeing tons of new products enter the market.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people tend to see or speak of IoT as one market, but it's not one market. IoT is full of segments, different use cases, and within this, you've got different technologies that have got pros and cons, benefits and limitations. And for me, it's all about picking the right segments and the right use cases that match the benefits of your technology. We're very clear on where we've got a best-in-class advantages, as I said, tracking, monitoring, plus the fact that we're a very robust technology, so you can add underneath the layer of security and anti-jamming. So that's where we're going. And we know also that our positioning is more B2B. You're talking about the AirTag. That's really clearly more of a B2C play today anyway. And why do we go for B2B? Because people tend to, sometimes people throw at us, yes, but you're a proprietary technology, you're not an open technology, etc. And it's true. It's true. But it doesn't mean that we limit our ecosystem. Our ecosystem, anyone can produce a Sigfox device or a Sigfox solution, and we don't charge any royalties for that. So in a way, we are open, we're economically open. But the difference is it's our technology. And at every stage, we do contribute and check that it meets our standards. So we provide the library for the device, et cetera, the APIs to extract the data. So in a way, it puts us in a clear B2B position. Doesn't mean we won't have some B2C usages of Sigfox, but we're not doing it. It's someone in our ecosystem that's going to go after the C.
We brought this up earlier with the electricity usage and with some of your answers, but very specifically, how does 5G kind of fit into maybe the competitive landscape, or just how does that impact the rollout of what Sigfox would like to do? You've mentioned the B2B part, you've mentioned other pieces, obviously the energy consumption. 5G is not exactly rolling out quickly. So, you know, what are your thoughts on what 5G represents to what you are building at Sigfox?
Yeah, well, 5G and even all technologies at one stage, and I'll go back to what I was saying earlier, it's not one market. And I think that in most cases, that's a bit of a catchy phrase too, but I think in most cases we complete rather than we compete. And that's the idea also behind the zero G. You're talking about 5G. There are clearly some use cases. If you don't care about the cost to some extent, if you don't care about energy consumption, if you need a lot of data, if you don't want any latency, you should clearly embrace 5G. But then on the other end of the scope, you have got lots of use cases where using 5G doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's a bit like killing a mosquito with a hand grenade. I mean, if you want to track pallets, if you want to monitor a remote gas tank in the middle of nowhere, 5G is an overkill. Why do it? And I think at one stage, people, customers need, have different needs. Sometimes even the same customer will have a need for different technologies, and we need to be open to that. And 5G could even be an opportunity one day, maybe, that a 5G provider would resell also Sigfox and say, okay, for 5G, for this use case, you should use our 5G, and for this use case, you've got this that they can call whatever they want that could be 0G. So I think it's we mustn't pick the wrong fight. For me, the fight isn't about fighting with other technologies for some slight overlaps that there might be. It's about growing the overall market and everyone picking the right segment, the right use cases that match their technology. And then if everyone is aligned, you can find a ways of working together also.
Yeah, I would just go back to jumping back to a point Ethan made before about the timing of all this. You know, it's interesting for me because I was in Silicon Valley for a long time before I moved to France, about 15 years. I lived through the dot-com bubble out there. You know, and what my general experience is that what Silicon Valley tended to get wrong was not what was going to happen, but the timing of it. You know, so if you go back to the dot-com bubble, I mean, one of the businesses that people laughed about was Webvan, you know, delivering groceries. Like, that's crazy. You know, who would think that that's possible? Today, 20 years later, everybody does it, right? I mean, it's a part of the landscape, and if you don't do it, your business is probably in trouble. And the pandemic accelerated that to some extent, but that's been happening for a while. And, you know, I remember, I used to cover a company like Cisco Systems. They used to publish these wild reports, you know, projections with IoT about connected cows and the number of devices and all that stuff. So probably wildly optimistic, as you were suggesting, in the timing, but it is now happening. You know, you can see it, whether it's the 0G or 5G, or, you know, as people figure out what are the price points, the energy, the use cases that make sense. And so, you know, to that end, I know, you know, now looking ahead in 2021, you guys have a partnership. I think this might have happened just after you officially became CEO, but you have a new partnership with Google, I think, on the cloud and some other initiatives. So what is the kind of focus now? What are you, how is that fitting into your strategic plan for this year?
So very, very clearly, as you said, we can feel that the market is finally picking up, and the cows might well end being connected soon. So to joke about your use case, but it's a good use case, by the way. But we're very clear on where we stand and where we want to go. So back to where we stand, we've got this technology that I think is incredible. We've got this unique end-to-end platform. We've got this unique network across 72 countries. We've identified clearly the segments where we're best in class and got best in class advantages and that we're going after. So now our priorities are, number one, we need to keep investing in our technology. And we were talking about price points and allowing our ecosystem to reach the RFID price points to open up whole new segments of the IoT market. We need to invest in our platform to make it capable of absorbing those hundreds of millions of connections, because as it grows, your platform needs to absorb all that and do it in a cost-efficient manner. And the logic behind Google was partly that, giving us the tools to scale and to adapt on that side. We're also should think about potentially opening our platform if needed to other technologies so that we can do the complete rather than compete part. You were talking about if someone needs 5G and at the same time needs Sigfox. So really on the technical side, very, very clear path. On the expansion phase, as I said, we have now covered most of the important, no disrespect to the others, but the most important countries, let's say, in the world, with the exception of China. So now it's all about densifying. It's all about continuing to roll out the network. It's about bringing the means to our Sigfox operators to accelerate this densification. And from a market point of view, then one, technology, two, expansion, three, go back to the connectivity. How do we foster international deals? How do we help companies embrace IoT? How do we help our Sigfox operators replicate what is successful in one country and replicate it in the other? We have got the advantage of being in so many countries with so many Sigfox operators that we see a lot of things, so we can help spread the good news. And we've got a dual sales approach, pull and push. And last but not least, I think also massive IoT creates a responsibility, because we're talking hundreds of millions of devices, hundreds of millions of components, hundreds of millions of batteries. And at one stage, that all comes with an environmental cost. And we are lucky enough to have a very frugal technology. As you know, it's very basic, uses very little energy, components are quite basic. So we also think it's our responsibility to invest time and money also into moving towards some biodegradable devices, components. I'm not saying that all of them will be, but we need to invest some time and money also in meeting the climate challenge and the environmental challenge. So those are our priorities moving forward.
Yeah, if you figure out how to make biodegradable chipsets, I think you'll be getting a Nobel Prize for I guess they don't have it for technology, but I don't know what that would be, chemistry maybe. But yeah, I mean, it's a good point. You don't want to see landfills full of, you know, Sigfox units or, you know, pools of them floating in the oceans or something like that. I mean, it's a fundamental challenge, I think, of all tech. We, you know, hear that when I was back in the U.S., worried about all the electric car batteries, you know, where are they going to end up? It's great that people are buying them, but I think that's the ongoing challenge of all the whole tech sector, really, to try to figure out how to make it more of a circular effect rather than one-time use and then, you know, it's sitting in the ground somewhere. Well, Jeremy, I want to thank you for being with us. I'm going to throw it back to Ethan to wrap up for us. Again, I appreciate your time, and I look forward to seeing you in Toulouse for Castellet and pain au chocolat.
A chocolatine.
Chocolatine.
Chocolatine. Oh my gosh. I'm going to be denounced and thrown out of Toulouse for that.
he's practicing for Paris when he comes up that he says the right thing.
All right.
Thank you so much, Jeremy, for taking the time to be with us today. And thank you, Chris, as always.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you to our listeners for joining us for this episode of French Tech News. Again, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Want more news and stories from France's incredible innovation ecosystem and its entrepreneurs? Subscribe to the French Tech News with Chris and Ethan on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and switch on notifications to be informed of new episodes as soon as they are released. You can connect with Chris and me on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Clubhouse. I am at Ethan Pierce, that's E-T-H-A-N-P-I-E-R-S-E, and Chris O'Brien is at O'Brien, O-B-R-I-E-N. Let us know if there are guests that you would like to see on the interview podcast or Clubhouse, as well as any stories that we should take a look at. As always, thank you for listening, and see you next time.